Hello and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast. We like to get right into it. And today, what we want to get right into, actually, we have a couple of things we're going to talk about. I'm going to talk about a little later on about Joe Biden's really dismal 2024 prospects. New poll shows just how dismal they are. But the first thing I want to talk about is those texts from January the 6th. The House January 6th committee, the Democratic committee, released a bunch of texts from Mark Meadows, who was then the White House chief of staff during the Capitol riot on January the 6th. And these were texts that were sent to Meadows that he kept and has handed over as part of their subpoena to him. And the thing that got the most news were texts from four people, three of them with Fox News: Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Brian Kilmeade, and one of them, the president's son, Donald Trump Jr. So there, the texts are from those people to Meadows on January the 6th as the riot is raging at the Capitol. And the texts are all a little different. People word things differently, but they all have one message to Meadows: get the president to tell those people to stop. Tell the rioters to stop. Tell them to leave right now. Okay? No uncertain terms. Stop. Leave. Now, these texts were made public during a meeting in which the committee was deciding whether to hold Meadows in contempt. No surprise there, they decided to do so. And they were read aloud by Liz Cheney, Republican who was selected by Democrats to be on the committee. Now, they raised a lot of controversy to begin with. And they really raised controversy for a couple of reasons. One, they said something about what was going on during the Capitol riot. But more importantly for people on the left, they were a new way to attack Fox News. And there were a number of attacks. And I'm going to talk specifically about one on Laura Ingraham. And they were just inaccurate. They were just wrong. But this is what they were doing. Start out with what the text actually said. And, Hannity said to Mark Meadows, "Can he make a statement, he being the president, ask people to leave the Capitol?" Donald Trump Jr. texted, "He needs to condemn this shit ASAP. We need an Oval Office speech." So the president's son, who, by the way, apparently could not directly contact his father, was saying Trump needed to condemn the riot in very, very forceful and no uncertain terms, and to do so from an Oval Office speech. Now, Laura Ingraham texted to Meadows, quote, "Mark, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He is destroying his legacy." Now, given all the controversy that happened, the first thing I think to ask about that text is, who could disagree with a word of that? Ingraham was exactly right. So was Hannity. So was Brian Kilmeade. So was Trump Jr. This was a disaster. The Capitol riot was a disaster in many ways, including, as Laura Ingraham said, the grave, irreparable damage it did to Trump's legacy. As the riot went on, Trump for hours, failed to come out and clearly tell his supporters to stop, to go home, to put an end to it. And that's what Laura Ingraham was urging him to do. And if he had done what she urged, it would have been much better for him and for the country and for everybody. The same with the advice that he got from his son, Donald Trump Jr. Now, here is where I have to put in a disclaimer to say that I am a Fox News contributor, and I've been a friend of Laura Ingraham's for many years before either of us were at Fox. So take that for what it's worth. But I think it's worth looking into the charge from the left against her. One, everything she said in the text was entirely correct. But then they went on to accuse her of hypocrisy, to say that in private, in this text to Mark Meadows, she was expressing great concern about what was going on at the Capitol. I mean, who wouldn't be concerned about what was going on at the Capitol? But in public, on her program, she was downplaying it. She was saying it was no big deal. She was saying maybe these weren't even Trump supporters. There were all sorts of other people. Antifa was in it. So there's this enormous hypocrisy, is the accusation from the left. So what Laura Ingraham did in response to this, it's always the strongest response, is just to play what she said on the night of January 6th. So you have to remember, on the night of January 6th, her program comes on 10 o'clock. I mean, we're talking just hours after the Capitol was cleared. And there was a lot we didn't know. There were rumors or even stories about a sprinkling of Antifa in the crowd. Clearly, if you read the indictments, the cases against a number of the rioters who've been charged with crimes in the Capitol riot investigation, the Justice Department, 600 and more people, a lot of them thought they would end up in a fight, not with police, but with Antifa. They thought there was some big Antifa force out there. So there was a lot of fog of war, lack of clarity in the hours after the Capitol riot dispersed in the late afternoon of January the 6th. But to suggest that Laura Ingraham or the other Fox hosts were downplaying it, were saying it was no big deal, is just absolutely wrong. And the way to make the case, is to listen to what she said. So what I'm going to do now is play a few seconds of what Laura Ingraham said on her program the night of January 6th. So let's listen to it right now.
Earlier today, the Capitol was under siege by people who can only be described as antithetical to the MAGA movement. Now, there were likely not all Trump supporters, and there are some reports that Antifa sympathizers may have been sprinkled throughout the crowd. We'll have more on that later. But the point remains, if you were a Trump supporter hoping to display your support for the president, well, today's antics at the Capitol did just the opposite. But those who breached the Capitol Hill's security today, whoever they were, they were criminals. I've been to literally dozens of Trump events, and the criminal actions we saw today do not represent this movement.
Okay, that is Laura Ingraham speaking on the night of January 6th. Now, does that sound to you like she's downplaying what happened? It doesn't sound that way to me. And by the way, there's additional stuff. I mean, she said on another occasion, on that program, night of January 6th, quote, there are legitimate concerns about how these elections were conducted, and in the middle of a pandemic with all the new restrictions. But that never should have lent any license to violence or other chaos. So, okay, that's what she was saying. She was basically saying this violence, this attack, this riot at the Capitol was inexcusable. Really clear. Now, she did mention Antifa once. There had been reports. There were reports that night. And a lot of inaccurate things are reported in the hours after a major news event. But the big picture was absolutely clear. Trump supporters did their cause enormous damage, and no electoral grievance justified the violence. Now, who could disagree with that? Again, it's like the text that she sent to Mark Meadows. Who could disagree with that? So the reason I play all this is to suggest that there's a lot less to this story about the texts than these critics would have you believe. They were absolutely delighted to see these texts that Fox News stars had written to Mark Meadows, and somehow try to concoct a case of hypocrisy against them. But look, these are people who have been attacking Fox for years, and they're going to keep attacking Fox. They'll do it on the basis of the texts this week, but they'll do it for some other reason next week, maybe some other reason the week after that. So keep that in mind when you read these tech stories or when you hear these tech stories, I'm not sure all of you are really watching CNN or MSNBC, but if you do, keep that in mind, that you're really not getting the whole story, that people at Fox, just like anybody else, could see the gravity, the seriousness of what was going on at the Capitol on January 6th. They believed, as I do, that the president should have earlier made a definitive, forceful statement against what was happening, to condemn it and to get and to urge with all the strength he had people to leave. Most of them were his supporters, urge them to leave the Capitol. So they believed what everybody else believed about that, that it was an appalling event and that the president should try to stop it. So it's not hypocritical to say that. So anyway, I wanted to discuss that those texts a little bit. One other story I want to talk about today, and that is Joe Biden's 2024 prospects. You know, in recent weeks, months maybe, mostly weeks, a realization seems to have settled in among Democrats in Washington. It was something they had never really considered, something that took them by surprise, something they found deeply disturbing. And the realization is the president is really old. President Biden is 79 years old. He will be 82 at the end of his first term. And if he runs for re-election, he would be asking the American people to keep him in office until he's 86 years old. And that's totally unprecedented in American history. Never, ever happened. Never even gotten close. And, of course, we've known all this for years. Democrats went ahead and nominated him, and he did win the election. So here we are. But the fact is, not at all clear, not at all clear that he will run again, or that he'll really be able to run again for a second term that would take him to age 86. I think everybody who's observed Joe Biden over the years has seen that he has slowed down in recent times, and that process would only continue as he hits 82 at the end of his first term, and then 86 at the end of a second term were he to have one. Now, there's a word for presidents who can't run again: lame duck. And no president wants to be a lame duck. And because of his age, Joe Biden is in fear of becoming a lame duck already in his first year of his first term. And there's no doubt that a number of Democrats are looking at him as a lame duck. It's pretty clear that a lot of Democrats believe that Joe Biden will not run in 2024. And here's the New York Times wrote a story about it. This is out in the open now. New York Times wrote a story about it recently. The 2024 election, quote, is increasingly on the minds of a long roster of ambitious Democrats and their advisors. With Mr. Biden facing plunging poll numbers and turning 82 this month, turning 82 the month he'd be on the ballot for re-election, and Vice President Kamala Harris plagued by flagging numbers of her own, conversations about possible alternatives are beginning far earlier than is customary for a president still in the first year of his term. So, I mean, that's lame duck right there. I mean, Joe Biden has been president, what, 10, 11 months? And he's a lame duck. So, a new poll from Morning Consult Politico shows just how bleak Biden's 2024 situation appears to be. Just 34% of registered voters say they want Biden to run again. Question's really simple. Do you want Joe Biden to run for president in 2024? 34% of registered voters want him to run again. 58% do not want him to run again. Those are terrible numbers for a new president. Now, among Democrats, you think, well, the president would have solid support among his Democratic Party. 63% say they want Biden to run. Well, that's a clear majority, but it's not really a great number for the president's own party, especially when 28% say they don't want him to run again. That is a very anemic expression of support from the Democratic Party. By the way, there's this There's a weird gender gap in Biden's Democratic support. 70% of Democratic men say they want him to run again. 56% of Democratic women say they want him to run again. So what does that mean? I don't really know, but more men support the old man than women do. Among independents, very important. Among independents, Biden's numbers are terrible. 23% want him to run again. I should say just 23% want him to run again against 67% who do not want him to run. These are just terrible numbers for a new president, a president who has not even finished his first year. Now, whenever I tweet something like this, I get lots and lots of people who respond, "Now do Trump." Their point being, they accuse me of ignoring former President Trump's political situation as well. So I'm now going to do Trump. Trump's numbers are not good, but Biden's are even worse. So among registered voters, 39% say they would like to see Trump run in 2024. Okay, that's versus 34% for Biden. And 56% say they do not want him to run. That's versus 58% for Biden. So, I mean, if you look at the electorate as a whole, registered voters as a whole, they don't want either one of them to run. Now look at the party. 70% of Republicans say they want Trump to run. Remember, that's versus 63% of Democrats who say want Biden to run. So 70% of Republicans want Trump to run versus 25% who don't. By the way, there's no gender gap there. Men, women among the GOP equal. Among independents, 31% want to see Trump run again. That's versus 23 for Biden. So 31% want to see Trump run again against 59% who don't. So, I mean, they're not great numbers for either one. They're worse for Biden than they are for Trump, but they're not great for either one. Now, the voters seem to be saying that they would like other choices for president in 2024. You know, I can do my whole age shtick, but I'll leave it for another podcast. But Trump, of course, would be 78 if he were elected for a second term, and he would be serving then until age 82, which is Biden's problem today. So Trump's a little younger than Biden, but by the time he became president again, if he were elected again, he would be Biden's age. So a number of voters seem to be saying they don't really like their choices. They would like other choices. There's an obvious opportunity for younger politicians of both parties who are eager to take the national stage. Now, the problem is Joe Biden does not want to see a bunch of young Democratic challengers arise, and Donald Trump certainly does not want to see a bunch of young Republican challengers arise. So they're going to be working hard to suppress all this, to keep it down. But there is this voter unhappiness. Now, the other thing, though, one more complicating factor is we often hear that voters don't like their choices. They often say that they would like other choices than the candidates that they've been offered. But in the end, they end up holding their nose and voting on the choice that is before them. So is that going to happen, or will there be new choices? I think the story of the next few years politically, will be about whether the old or the new will prevail. All right, listen, I want to thank you very much for joining me. Glad we could talk about those texts. Glad we could talk about Biden's chances. And I hope you'll join me again in the future for another edition of the Byron York Show.